towels.
Okay, we're about to begin a new sugya, but we're going to begin the new sugya literally on the heels of the previous sugya. And this is going to continue to explore the sugyas of Sveik Sveika. So Sveik Sveika is one of the most yesodistic, one of the most fundamental lomdish sugyas in Shas. And it had very, very, almost very, very small, the sugyas in the Gemara itself. You have a line here, a line there, half line here, half line there, and one of those half lines is our sugya in Masechta Bavakama about Shulya. So let's begin back with our sugya about Shulya and then begin to branch out to the other place in Shas where the Gemara references Sveik Sveik and try to get a little bit of a better picture as to what is going on in terms of this fundamental sugya. So the sugya begins on the first of the Mamakamos in Bavakama Dafid Alpha, but Alpha, it's the same lines we read before, but we're going to. The last couple of words is what starts the ball rolling for us today. So it starts with, again, as we read already last week, Amulam Rabbi Lozer. Shulya Shiatz the Mitzasa Biyam Risha Mitzasa Biyam Shaini. So a woman is having a miscarriage, and this sack, or Shulya, whatever the Shulya exactly is, we'll translate it as the sack, is exiting her body. Part of it is leaving her body on Sunday, part of it is leaving it on Monday. The question is, which day is she labeled to be a Yoledes? So the halacha is clear that whichever day Rov of the baby came out, that's the moment of truth. The problem is we have no idea which one it is. And that moment of truth is so critical for us on so many different levels, because when she's labeled to have the status of Yoledes, it's at that point that she's Tamea. So if she touches anything, after that point, that becomes Tamei. Number two, it's critical for us to pinpoint the exact moment of Leida, because that's when the 7 days of Tuma, or for a girl, the 14 days of Tuma, or the days of Tara, 33 days and 66 days, when she can go to Mikvah, can't go to Mikvah. So many things revolve around that same point of when exactly did the lady take place. So Ula starts out by saying, Man Laman Arishon. That we count her from the first day. We assume already at the first day there was a halachic leida, and therefore everything kicks into place at the first day. So Amalei Rava Madaitech Chumra. So Rava questioned Ula the neighbor Belozer and said, obviously your goal is to be machmir. Obviously you don't really know. Nobody knows when the leida really was. So clearly your intention is to be machmir, namely to say, well, once it starts already at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday, we'll declare her to be Tameya from that point on. So that would be legitimate. That would be a Chumrah. The only problem is Chumrah Diyasal De Kulo. That Chumrah is going to lead to a big Kula, to a leniency down the line, to Kometara Slamarisha. Because if you really truly believe that she was a Yoledes from day one, then her 14 days are going to kick in from day one. And on the 15th day, starting from day one, she will have already gone to the mikvah. All blood that happens at that point will be dam tohar. She won't have any effect on her status anymore. She can be with her husband, she can touch things, etc. So comes the Gemara and says, that's a bit cooler. And you don't even know that's true. Because maybe the birth took place on Monday, and maybe you're actually one day behind. So therefore, what do we have to do? Ela barava, lachosh chasheshes, memna lamimnya ela l'sheini. So really what you have to do is you have to take almost the worst of both worlds. You have to take all the chumras, because it's a suffix, everything is a suffix. So you have to be machmer all ends, and you have to say, well, maybe she gave birth on Sunday, and therefore she's tamei at that point. But then turn around 2 weeks later and say, well, maybe not. Maybe she gave birth on Monday, and therefore she's not tahora till 2 weeks from Monday. So we have to be machmer at the beginning of the count, and machmer at the end of the count, because we really don't know. It's almost like the model, like a little bit of a mashal, almost like Sveka B'yoma. Like in the olden days, we didn't really know when Rosh Chodesh was, so we have to play it, the chumrah on both ends. We have to refrain from eating chometz today, because maybe it is the first day of Pesach. On the other hand, maybe it's not. So therefore, we have to refrain in 8 days from now from eating chametz, because maybe that's the last day of Pesach. So it's the same kind of a model. So we're going to be machmir on both ends. So now the Gemara says, "My kamash v'lon." What's the chiddush of everything that we just said? This is obvious, the Gemara says. Anybody could have figured, it took us 10 minutes to figure it out, but anybody could have figured this out. Everybody realizes that it's a suffix. Nobody really knows when the leida was. So therefore, obviously, you have to be machmir on day one to be mitamihar, and you have to then go ahead and be machmir on day 14 to wait the extra day. So the Gemara says, no, not so simple. My kamash balon, the chiddush is as follows. The ein mikta shulya below vlad. The chiddush of Ula and Rabbi Lozer and Rav of this entire sugya is that whenever there's any amount of a shulya that comes out, even the smallest amount of a sack that comes out, there's going to be some of the baby inside it. Now, again, we don't know how much, but some of the baby is going to be inside. That's the chiddush. That's the kamash balon. What in the world does that mean? So the Rishonim explain what it means as follows. If the biological facts would have been that it is conceivable for there to be no part of baby in theory, the woman could have possibly passed some of the sac and there would have been absolutely nothing inside, then everything would have changed. Now again, don't get too committed to that idea, because it's not true. Because the Emma says that a mikta shebelo vlad, but in the world of theory, if that would have been, then everything would have been different. Why would everything would have been different? So Tosus explains on the spot, because then we would have had, and of course that's the name of Asugya, we would have had a sfeik sfeika on our hands. What would the sfeik sfeika have been? Oh, we could have started calling all kinds of sfeik sfeikas in all directions. First of all, how do you know that there's any vlad here altogether? That's suffix number one. The even in Tim Salomar, that you have a part of a vlad here, how do you know that you have a rove of the vlad here? So if that sfeik sfeika could have gotten off the ground, which it can, because biologically it's not true, but if it could have gotten off the ground, then all bets would have been off. The whole sugya would have looked totally different. The entire premise of the sugya is that once there's any amount of shulya there, we have to reckon with some vlad. There must be some piece of vlad there, and therefore we can't start the ball rolling by saying, well, maybe there's nothing here. What do you mean there's nothing here? If there's shulya here, then shulya equals vlad. That's the biological, that's what the OBs are telling us. Shulya equals vlad. End of discussion. You can pilpul whether it's a rove vlad or it's not a rove vlad. That's a viable suffix, but that's only one suffix that's not going to help you. But imtim tzalayim, if it would have been true that there would have been a possibility, a biological possibility of mikta shulya below vlad, then we would have been free to address the sugya, to approach the sugya to a totally different vantage point. And we could have called the sugya a sfeik sfeika. The sfeik sfeika would have read as follows. Maybe there's no vlad altogether. And even in Tim Tzalomah, there is a vlad. Maybe there's not a rov vlad. And that would have been a legitimate, viable sfeik sfeika. So it happens to be wrong, because biologically it's not true. But that's exactly what the chiddush of Ulun Rav Elazar is. So licked in this law in the Gemara, my kamash vlad aiming to shir below vlad, is the clear indication that if the facts would have been otherwise, which they're not, but if the facts would have been otherwise, we would have looked at the sugya entirely differently, and what would have prompted us to look at the sugya differently would have been the principle called sfeik sfeika. So come to Rishonim and say, you see from this Gemara, there's a principle called sfeik sfeika. And it's a fascinating raya, because the facts are all wrong. The Gemara says it's not true. There never was such a biological truth. But if there would have been, then there would have been a sfeik sfeika. So just because the biology fails us, doesn't mean that the halacha fails us. That means the biology is not true. But if the Muslim would have been true, then the halacha would have been such and such.
So the sfeik sfeika, that the first day should be...
Everything would be mutter, right? Everything would be okay, right?
Just the first day, not the second day.
Right. The second day we would have had it, right, yes. right, for sure. The first day we would have said, Torah, no problem, no big deal. How do you know Torah? Well, it's not a suffix. No, it's not a suffix. It's a sfeik sfeika. Maybe there's no vlad altogether, and even if there is, maybe it's not a rove.
And she would have been tahor.
And we could have turned everything right. We could have turned everything around. Right. So come to Rishonim and say, this is not the entire sugya of sfeik sfeika. We're not, all of Hilchos sfeik sfeika is not hinging on this one half-baked diuk in the Gemara Bavakam Daf Yud Aleph. There are more explicit statements of Chazal concerning sfeik sfeika. So let's take a look at where sfeik sfeika appears in Shas a little bit more explicitly, and then begin to connect the dots to get a little bit of a better picture of what's going on.
If the sfeik sfeika eliminates day one, why can't the sfeik sfeika eliminate day two?
Because by the time...
Long, that's mevatel the whole basis of it.
No, but by the time the second day passes, the entire shulya is out. So if the whole shulya is out, then for sure the vlad came out. There's no question. It's only on day one, but we're not even sure. Only part of the shulya came out on day one. But by the time day two rolls around, the entire shulya came out between day one and day two. So once the whole shulya came out, then it's a done deal. So let's take a look and see a little bit more explicit in the Gemara,
Is the shulya one thing? Or it's coming out in pieces?
I assume it's coming out in pieces, I think so, yeah. So comes the Gemara in Ksubas, starts at the bottom of the Ches of the Beis, and quickly goes on to Daf Tes Amud Aleph. If you would tell somebody, we learned the Sugya Sfeik Sfeika, and someone would ask you, what daf is it on? And you would say you're on Daf Ches Amud Beis, they would laugh at you. They say, hey, I'm Aris, I don't even know what daf Sfeik Sfeika is on. The only reason why it starts, the first word in the line, the bottom word in the line is Omar, and then it starts Rabbi Elazar. So in the Bar Ilan, they put it on, starts as if it's on Daf Ches Amud Beis, and moving on to Tes Amud Aleph. And the yeshivas, they know it's Daf Tes Amud Aleph in Masech Ksumas. So Omar Rabbi Elazar. Omer Pesach Pasuach Matzasi Neman la'osra alav. So this is already, it's like dropping us in the middle of a ksuba sugya. We have to, like a 10-minute introduction, making it a 5-minute introduction, about what we were talking about. So the very first Mishnah, Masechet Ksubos, deals with the issue of what's called Tainus Pesulim. It's a couple gets married, and the husband walks into Beis Din the next morning, and he claims that his wife was not a Basula. So that statement has multiple impacts in halacha. So the main topic of the first Berachah Masechet Ksubos is the impact that has in terms of the Dinei Mamonos. Because by claiming that his wife is not a Basula, if those are the facts, so then the whole number that was written in the Ksuba was incorrect. Because it says in the Ksuba, Kesef Basulaichi, it talks about the amount of the money that a Basula gets. If a woman's getting married for the first time, or even if it's not literally, even if it's literally the first time, but she's not a Basula, she had relations with somebody else before, so then the numbers are going to be different. So the number for a Ksuba of a Basula is 200 Zuz. The number for a Ksuba for a woman who is not a Basula is only 100 Zuz. So that's the first issue, in terms of, do we get the right amount of money here? So there's a potential Dinimamunus Shaila taking place here. But then there's a whole other Shaila taking place here, that which impacts upon the very status of the marriage. Namely, well, when did she become not a Basula? So if she became not a Basula, if she was Mazana with somebody 5 years ago, before she met this person, before she was Mekudesh to this person, so, okay. It's not a pretty thing, not a nice thing. It may impact the Dinei Mamonos, but it's not going to impact on their status together. However, if she was Mazana between the time of Kedushin and Nisuin, that's going to be a big problem. So Kedushin and Nisuin is a window of time when the woman is technically an Eshazish. Once she accepts Kedushin from somebody, either Kes Vishtar or Bi'il L'Shem Kedushin, that wasn't the case here, obviously. If it's either Kesef Ashtar, so then she becomes Bukudasha, she becomes an Eshazish Min HaTorah, and if she's Mezana with somebody at that point, she's an Eshazish Azinsa. That's a very, very serious problem. Then months later, up to a year later, she undergoes the status of Nisuin, and they go and they begin to live together. And it's only at that point of Nisuin when he can walk at the basin and say, wait a second, I thought she was a Basula, she's not a Basula anymore. And by saying she's not a Basula, he may very well be saying that she was Mezana during that window of time between the Kedushin and the Nisuin. The problem is that, forget about the Dinei Mamonos, forget about the 200 Zuz of the Ksuba, she becomes an Eshazish Azinsa. If she did it willingly, then she's a Surah Labaila, the Olam Vod. She can no longer be with her husband. She's like any other married woman who's Mezana Tachas Baila. So comes up Elazar and says, the fellow walks to the Beis Din and he doesn't know very much. He really doesn't know when exactly she was Mezana, but he does know that she's not a Basula. How does he know? So Gemara uses the phrase, which is a nice way, a lashon sukkah, you know what I'm saying, that the area was open, namely, she's clearly not a Basula. There's no question that he's saying she must have had a maisabia with somebody at some point. So Rabbi Elazar says, by saying that statement, neman la'osra love, he now has namonos, he is now believed to say that she has a suratim. Now they have to get divorced, because he's saying pesach pesach matzasi. So first of all, before we get into the intricacies of when this act of znus took place, why is he believed altogether? Based on what? He's an Eid Echad, he's a Baal Dover, he's related to her, he's our husband. What kind of Nemanus is that? Apishnai made him Yakum Dover. Why is the Beis Din even listening to this fellow? So the Gemara explains that the Beis Din is not listening to this person as an aid, but rather the Beis Din is listening to this person, what's called in Halacha, Shavya Anafshe Chaticha De Isura. If I walk at the Beis Din and I say some incriminating evidence about myself, it's going to impact Issa Heter about myself. Let's say a woman walks into the Beis Din. We have no idea who she is. We thought she's a single girl. She walks into the Beis Din and she says, oh, by the way, I'm a married woman. Eishes Nishani. Do we believe her? No. Because in order to prove that you're a married woman, you have to bring Eidim. On the other hand, a week later when she says, I'd like to get married, so we say to her, wait, hold the phone. A week ago you told us that you were an Eishes Ish. So we trusted you. Not that we really thought you were married. We didn't really truly believe you were married. But vis-a-vis yourself, we have to treat you like being married. That's what's called Shavya Nafshe Chaticha Disura. So the Mishnah Maseches Kedushin says that a person has that koach, has that ability to walk in the Beis Din and say some kind of incriminating statement against themselves. And Beis Din will not really believe you. On the other hand, they're going to have to make believe that what you're saying is true vis-a-vis yourself. And now unless you can come up with a get from your supposed husband, who according to us doesn't even exist, but lefid varayach, according to your words, you have to be able to produce an evidence that you are now migureshes. So that's halacha called shavya nafshe chaticha disura. So that's what the Gemara explains. That's what's playing out here as well. That when the husband walks into the Beis Din and he says, Pesach Masloch Matzasi, So that's translated to me. My wife is a surah to me. She's an Asian, she's in Sa. So we turn around to him and we say, we don't really believe what you're saying, but what are we going to do? We have to treat you as if you're telling the truth. So the Gemara questions the very statement of Rabbi Elazar. The Gemara says, wait a second. V'yamai, sveik sveikahu. And this is one of the few places in Shas where the Gemara actually uses the term in the authentic sense, in the real way, of sveik sveikahu. Says the Gemara, wait a second. What did the person say? All he said in Beis Din was, Pesach Pasuach Matzos. He never walked into Beis Din and said, I saw my wife being mezana. If he would walk into Beis Din and say, I was there, I saw being mezana beratzon, so that's a Pesach Pasuach Matzos. That's a Shavya Navshach Dikhli Sur. He didn't say that. All he said was, Pesach Pasuach Matzos. We touched that up to mean, oh, must be, she's an Eishes Isha Zinsa. He says, what's the Eishes Isha? How do you know? Even the feed of, even if he's right, which we don't really believe, but even according to his words, that we have to trust him, we have to believe, we have to act upon what he's saying, that it's a Pesach Matzuach Matzasi, why in the world does that translate to mean that she is a Surah Labaila? There's a Sveik Sveika playing out here. There's a double doubt. There are two different scenarios that could have been playing out that would declare her to be Muteris. What's the Sveik Sveika? Sufik Tachtav, Sufik Ein Tachtav. So first of all, we have absolutely no way of knowing. He for sure has no way of knowing. When did this supposed znus take place? Even the feed devarav that there was a znus that happened. Because again, the feed devarav she's pesach basuach, so she's not a basul anymore. So she was mezan at some time. When did this happen? Didn't this happen when she was married between kedushin and nisuin during those last 6 months or so, or did it happen? Did it precede the kedushin? So that's suffix number one. If the znus preceded the kedushin, so that's going to change the numbers of the ksuba in terms of dollars and cents, but that's not a sugya. We're trying to pass it up whether the couple can remain married or not. So if this nus preceded the kedushin, so then she's perfectly permissible to her husband. If it followed the kedushin, then she's an eshes isha zinsa. So the Gemara says that's suffix number one. Suffix taftach, suffix ain't taftach. V'yim tam tzalem taftach. This is the lingo of a sveik sveika. And even if you're going to say that it was taftach, which means that you think you have a problem, it's only a 50-50 chance whether you have a problem. Here's the second suffix. Suffix be'ones, suffix be'ratzon. How do you know how this nus took place? Maybe she was attacked. Maybe she was forced. The Torah says in Pashas Naso, in the Pashas Sota, v'hilon is posa, that the only time that an Eisha Zisha Zinsa becomes prohibited to her husband, that's only if it was done willingly. If she was forced, if she was attacked, so then she's totally permissible. She's muteris to her husband. So comes the Gemara and says, we just identified two independent sveikas. There are two different sveikas that are playing out here. Each one in and of themselves would have been a 50-50 chance, and if it would have only been a suffix of tachta versus eno tachta, or if it would have only been a suffix of onus or ratzon, we would have to never throw our hands up and say, we're sorry. It's a 50-50 chance we have an isadera'i here, and you have to get divorced. But since we have two independent sveikas that join together, join forces, combined together, that enables us to invoke the principle of sveik sveika, and therefore she should be muteris, even if he's telling the truth. And again, in our heart of hearts, we're not even sure he's telling the truth. But even the halacha, that we have to act like as if he's telling the truth, and we have to take his word seriously, but says the Gemara, but wait a second, even taking his word seriously, don't translate to Mitzvah Asura, because there's a sveik sveika that's playing out. So this is not one of the sources of sveik sveika. This is the best possible, strongest source in Shas for the principle of sveik sveika. Here the Gemara actually uses the word sveik sveika and uses it in a manner that's familiar to us, that maybe it's mutar, maybe she's mutaris for reason X, and even if reason X is wrong, maybe she's mutaris for reason Y. So we now have two sugyas we just collected that invoke the principle of sveik sveika. One was our sugya, which doesn't really invoke it practically because the facts are wrong, because every piece of shilya has a little piece of lad, so we can't even get the sveik sveika off the ground realistically. But we would have. If the facts would have been correct, then we would have been able to say a sveik sveika. Maybe there's no vlad, and maybe there is vlad. And even if there is vlad, maybe it's not a rope of vlad. So that's sveik sveika of a kama daf yud aleph. Then there's sveik sveika of ksuba staf, really daf tesam and aleph. That's the real sveik sveika of sufik tachtav, sufik ene tachtav. Fiyumtum slama tachtav, shema beratzon, shema ones. And in the end of the day, the Gemara defends Rabbi Elazar. We're going to hopefully come back to this a little bit later on in the sugya. The Gemara is going to explain that there are certain scenarios where the sveik sveika fails us, in the case of ksubas. Even ksubas daf tes, which is the best possible sveik sveika, is the most authentic sveik sveika, is going to run into certain unique situations where the Sfeik Sfeikah, just the facts may not be right. They may be lacking. One of those two Sfeikahs may not be authentic. But these are the two Sugyas in Shas that are pointing in the direction of Sfeik Sfeikah exists. One is Bava Kamma Daf Yud Aleph, one is Ksubas Daf Ches. And if you remember, last week we said that assuming there is such a principle called Sfeik Sfeikah, what's it based on? So we have two very, very different approaches. Almost like a Sfeik Sfeikah, what the Sfeik Sfeikah is based on. We have two different approaches as to how and why Sfeik Sfeikah really works. According to the Rambam's understanding, the way the Achronim explained was that the first Sfeik knocks it down to a Derabbanan, because all Sfeikahs are really Mutter Min HaTorah. And the second Sfeik takes a Din Derabbanan and says, well, Sfeik Derabbanan Lekula. So according to the Rambam's view, it went almost in two steps, two stages. First, we had to get it out of the Deraisa realm. Once we're in the Derabbanan world, then we just look the other way at the 50-50 Sfeik and call it a day. According to the Rashba, that would not be acceptable, because the Rashba holds that all Sfeikas are, in fact, also Min HaTorah. So according to the Rashba, it's based on a totally different picture. It's based on the idea of what we called last week the blackboard rove. We put four logical possibilities, four boxes on the board, and we said, box number one, mutter, box number two, mutter, box number two, or if box number four is true, so then we're in a pickle, then we have a problem. So as long as you have three out of four logical outcomes are permissible, so then it would be permissible. So again, we have two different ways of reading the sugya of Sfeik Sfeikah, but the source of Sfeik Sfeikah, the two sources of Sfeik Sfeikah, are the implication of Bava Kamma Daf Yud Aleph and the explicit statement of the Ksubas Daf Tes of where the Gemara uses actually the phrase, the word itself, am I Sfeik Sfeikah? The problem is there is a third Makor in Shas that seems to ignore the principle of Sfeik Sfeikah, and this sets the stage for a major question in the Rishonim: what do we do with this piece of information? So that third sugya is a sugya in Beitz Daf Gimel of a Beis. Now here also the Gemara doesn't actually use the term Sfeik Sfeikah, but the Gemara describes something that seems to undermine the institution of Sfeik Sfeikah. So the Gemara Beitz Daf Gimel of a Beis, as its name sounds, it's talking about the sugya at the very beginning of Maseches Beitza. Beitza is called Beitza because it's the first mishnah is Beitza Shenol Debiyamtiv. It's a very, very strange Masechta because it's the only Masechta that we have a name for that really has nothing to do with the Masechta itself. The Masechta is not about eggs. The Masechta is about Hilchos Yomtiv. It just happens to be the first sugya. It happens to talk about an egg that's laid on Yomtiv. It's a very, very strange name for Masechta. It's such a strange name for Masechta that the Rishonim actually did not even call it Maseches Beitza. They call it Maseches Yomtiv. That it's a fairly new innovation that we have somehow call it, I'm saying new, last 800 years, whatever it is. But if you look at many Rishonim, call it Maseches Yomtiv, which definitely makes much more sense than to call it Maseches Beitza. Maseches Beitza somehow has gotten into trouble in terms of what to call it, because there were those who had the practice that they didn't want to use the term Maseches Beitza, because the word Beitza has a little bit of a not such an appropriate meaning. It's Beitzin. Beitzin means refers to that part of a man's body. It's not the nicest way of speaking. So therefore, there were many who had the practice of calling Maseches Beya. So you may have heard that when you were a kid, the Rebbe would probably, you know, he'd get yelled at you if he said Maseches Beitza. So we don't say, in Europe, they would never say Maseches Beitza. They would always call it Maseches Beya. That was somehow a little nicer way of saying it, even though the word Beya in Aramaic means Beitza. So I'm not exactly sure what you accomplished. So just in case you're interested, that one of the Rishonim did actually call it Maseches Beitza. Actually did not call it Maseches Yontif, and actually pronounced it Maseches Beitza. How do I know that? Rabbeinu Chananel. Because Rabbeinu Chananel, in the beginning of Maseches, I'm going to call it Maseches Beitza, the beginning of the Masechta, so Rabbeinu Chananel writes a little bit of a poem. Rabbeinu Chananel is talking about pre the Rif, back in the 900s. We have a little bit of a rhyme, a little bit of a poem that he wrote before he starts it. And the last two lines of the poem are that something like, Be'ezras Gedol Ha'etza, Ascha Lefarsh Maseches Beitza. That with the help of the Rabban Shalom, the Gedol HaEitzah, the one who gives all the advice, I'm going to start Maseches Beitza. So you have one of two conclusions you can draw. Either that he called him Maseches Beitza, or he was a terrible poet, because it wouldn't have rhymed, Beya and Eitzah, wouldn't have rhymed. So we're going to give Rabbi Chanan the benefit of the doubt that he called it Maseches Beitza. So in the bottom line is that it's always been confusing names of Masechta. I remember when I was a little boy, so the first Siyum Masechta I ever went to, I remember I was 5-6 years old, there was somebody in the little shul, we used to daven on Friday nights in a little shtivel across the street from our house. So the son of the rabbi made a Siyum on Maseches Beitza. I remember 5-6 years old at the time. Why do I remember the Siyum? Because I remember he was talking about an egg. And then I remember his father got up and said, oh, it's such a schus, my son made a siyum. He's been learning this for the last year and a half or something. And I remember scratching my head at the time and asking my father, I said, what could he possibly learn about an egg for a year? I was thinking to myself, was it a scrambled eggs? Was it a sunny sun up? Was it a hard boiled? What could you talk about for a year and a half about eggs? And then I realized the emissary you could learn the sugya at the beginning of Beitza for a year and a half, but there's 40 other blot in the Masechta about Yontif. So bottom line is, the first Mishnah Masechta is Beitza tells us that a Beitza should only be Yontif is off limits. If an egg is laid on Yontif, so you're not allowed to eat that egg on Yontif. Why not? So the Gemara actually has four different reasons why not eat the egg. There are reasons related to muksa and related to other Allah halachas about chana de rabban and gezeira. Half a dozen different reasons why this base is off limits, but the bottom line is it's off limits. And then the Mishnah, the Gemara goes on to say, the base that's laid on Yontif is a problem, and the base that's laid on Shabbos is a problem. All baits that are laid on that day are else. You can eat after Shabbos, you can eat after Yontif, but on the day itself. So for different reasons of muksa and nolad and achonis and all kind of different kuntzim, the Beitza is off limits. So comes the Gemara, the third of the Mamikamos, and says, quotes a Brice that says, Echad Beitza should be Shabbos, V'echad Beitza should be Yomtiv, Eim et Tatar Asa. Not only are you not allowed to eat it, but it's muksa also, you're not allowed to move it. Why is that? A very simple corollary. If you can't eat it, so then it's basically worthless, basically useless. The halacha is, whenever you have something on Shabbos and Yomtiv that's not usable, it by definition becomes labeled as muktzah. The worst kind of muktzah is sticks and stones and rocks and, you know, and dirt, things that have absolutely no use to them. Those are muktzah mamish. So anytime you have, you know, it's a beautiful looking egg, it's going to make a delicious omelet tomorrow. But right now I can't use it for anything. So since I can't use it right now, it's muktzah. So you're not allowed to move it for anything. A metaltonosa, lo lechasos basa kli. Even if you want to use this egg to cover something up with, what you're going to cover up the egg with, I have no idea. You better be a very strong egg. You want to use it to help support the bed or something. You want to use it for all kind of kuntzu, crazy reasons. You don't want to eat the egg. You want to use it for some other thing. Nope, it's considered to be muktzah. What you can do is, let's say the egg was laid by the hen and now it's laying on the floor and you're afraid someone's going to step on it. So you can take a bowl and cover over the egg because I'm not moving the egg. I'm doing something to cover the egg. So that would be okay. That the Gemara also has a whole discussion about that. But this is the part that's relevant for us. Usveika asura. What if I have an egg and I'm not even sure it was laid on Yontif? I didn't check where the chicken coops are yesterday. So it could be that this egg may have been laid yesterday. I'm not sure. I come into the hens on Yontif afternoon. I see there's an egg there. When was the egg laid? I don't know. Maybe it was laid yesterday. Maybe it was laid today. So it's a suffix. So the Brice says, Usveik Asura. So the egg is off limits. Suffix Beitza Shinol de Beyontif is Asur, which in and of itself raises an entire sugya of Beitza. Because it could be that a Beitza Shinol de Beyontif may only be Asur in the Rabbana. That's also Machlokes in the Gemara. So we're not even sure why suffix is Asur, but we're going to have to take that for granted right now. And then the Brice concludes with, Vibris Arvim Elef Kulon Asuros. If the egg gets mixed up with 1,000 other eggs, all the eggs are usher as well until Shabbos or Yontif is over. So it's that last two lines, last couple of phrases that say, Sveik Asur, Nisab El Kun Asuros, that sets the stage for the question of the Rishonim. Wait a second, what happened to Sveik Sveik? So hopefully, Mitzvah Shem, tomorrow we'll pick up on what happened to Sveik Sveik in this. So again, once we figure out why Sveik Sveik is missing here, then you have to go back to the drawing board and figure out, well, why is sometimes Sveik Sveik valid, sometimes not. That's going to set the stage for three Ramachlikas and Rishonim, literally the ABCs of when Sveik Sveik works, when Sveik Sveik doesn't work. Mitzvah tomorrow.